KVU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KVU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KVU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thanks for Giving, a Give Guide Happy Hour with Human Solutions, ERCO, and KVU on Monday, November 20th at 5 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room in Portland. Human Solutions is partnering with KVU and ERCO to say thank you to their donors and to celebrate being included in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. The evening includes beer and snacks as a way of saying thanks for giving to all their supporters. Again, that's Thanks for Giving, a Give Guide Happy Hour with Human Solutions, ERCO, and KVU on Monday, November 20th at 5 p.m. at the Lagunitas Community Room, 237 Northeast Broadway Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. Coming up at 11:30, Words and Pictures, creative voices from Portland's stop-motion animation community, talk about their work now on exhibit at the Portland Art Museum in Animating Life, the art, science, and wonder of Leica. But next, it's Between the Covers. Todd Davies is live in studio with her updated food memoir and cult classic, Jam Today. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KVU, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, and welcome to Between the Covers. This is a KVU show where we are fortunate enough to get a whole half hour to talk with, to speak with authors. It's a lovely thing, and this morning, our guest is Todd Davies. She's a writer. I can't do everything you've done because that will be the entire. She's one of the most accomplished human beings I know. So we're going to stick with writing. A writer, author, and publisher of Exterminating Angel Press. And we're here today. Jam Today is one food memoir. Jam Today, too, The Revolution Will Not Be Catered.
And it won't be.
That's right. And she's also written the Arcadia Trilogy, though now it's up to four books, so it's a little more than a trilogy. Snotty Saves the Day, Lily the Silent, The Lizard Princess, and the newest one is Report from Megalopolis, which is...
Report to Megalopolis.
Two, excuse me. It said two in my... well.
Get it together, Lynn.
Thank you. It's 11. Even in Portland, it's time to get it together.
How much coffee have you had?
None. That's my problem. So Jam Today comes from Lewis Carroll's book, Alice Through the Looking Glass, where the queen says, the rule is jam today and jam yesterday, but never jam. I mean, jam tomorrow and jam yesterday, but never jam today. And Alice objects, saying, can't we sometimes have jam today? And so you say this is not so much a memoir as you're speaking to the queen. And what are you saying to her?
I'm saying it really should be jam today every day. The culture gets a little too much. Jam yesterday, oh, it was so wonderful back then. And oh, if we just keep not doing things that are fun right now, it'll be great in the future. And that's really, that's a recipe for disaster. You really want to be enjoying every single moment of your life, and you want to be helping your loved ones and your community to enjoy absolutely as much as is possible.
And cooking for you is huge in that area.
It is.
And for many of us, there's a lot of folks that find it troublesome. And it's like, I remember my mother going, what am I going to cook tonight?
Isn't that sad?
Uh-huh.
And I think I say this in the book somewhere, I think a lot of that comes from being forced to do it, feeling that it's your obligation to do it. It's kind of like I say in the book, there are probably some people who authentically don't like sex. But there probably are not that many people who authentically do not like sex. But anyone who has been forced to have sex is not going to like sex. And it is the same thing with food. I mean, food is one of the great joys of being in this body. Might as well enjoy it. You're only here for a short period of time. Let's go for the joy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the joy also does not include excess. I mean, rational excess. You got to feast. But if you feast every day, it's not going to be any fun. It just isn't. Your body's going to say, I give up. I really don't want any more of this. And if you starve all the time, your body really is going to give up. And you want to find what your body really likes to do. And each person knows what they really... This is why it's a political thing for me, why food is political for me, because discovering who each individual really is themselves and themselves having control over that and control over what they then can do within the parameters of their life actually forms a healthier polity than one that is being given rules from the top, or Martha Stewart.
Though I do use her chicken
recipe. Yeah. Don't tell me about Martha Stewart.
All right. And as I've always said about you, you are, if MFK Fisher was an anarchist, it's you.
Oh, I love that. I tell Lynn, it's always so much fun to come here and sit and talk food with you.
Well, thank you. So you throughout this whole book talk about this is like nurturing yourself is part of being politically active.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it
not,
is. Because
not saying, hey, that's not important, you bougie people with your food.
No. I mean, and you can't. And also the other thing is we have to be kind about what other people do. I mean, really, we should be focusing on ourselves a little bit more. If any of us find ourselves sliding into, I am making myself feel better by thinking that other people are worse than me, we should immediately get out of that skid and go back to thinking, okay, what do I want for lunch?
Right. And I've seen this on many of your Facebook posts. You think way ahead with food.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you attribute this to being a San Franciscan. I don't know if that's true.
Well, that's hilarious. You know, I was on the KATU Live afternoon show yesterday, uh-huh. and the host was fantastic. Turns out she grew up in San Francisco, too. And I said, so do you talk about the next meal at the meal you're eating? And she goes, yes. Do you? And I said, everyone in San Francisco does. She said, I thought it was just that I was greedy. And I said, no, it's actually a cultural thing.
I find that because I'm full.
I know.
But I eat by craving.
Well, that's a good way.
Yeah. That's how I always pick what I'm going to eat.
That's excellent.
The only time that's bad is if I'm not craving anything and I know I really need to eat something.
Oh, cheese. Sorry, Jerry. If Jerry Donahue is listening, sorry, I said cheese. He hates cheese.
Oh.
Craving is a perfectly good way to do it. But I just like thinking about food. I mean, that's why I wrote these cookbooks, because it's so much fun to think about it. Think about what I'm going to eat. Think about what I did eat. Think about what I could eat, you know.
Well, I love that you go out looking for bargains, too. That's like, is that part of the fun?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really...
Old meat she likes. Well,
when you put it that way, it sounds terrible. But honestly, meat that's aged a little tiny bit is tastier than that bright pink meat that you see that is immediately and the most expensive in the market. The meat, when it starts turning brown after a couple of days, I mean, if it doesn't smell bad, it's great.
Okay.
And they usually mark it down, and then I go home with a great sense of triumph as I cook it.
And you can cook any part of an animal, just about.
Yeah, and I think we should. I mean, I am definitely one of those whole animal people. I'm married to a vegetarian, by the way, so my household is morally correct, half of us anyway. But me, I actually believe that everything eats everything. I mean, life is a continuous cycle. The real illness and the real sin to me is waste, mm-hmm. and disrespect to what you consume. You have to consume. There is no way. And there's no way we can walk outside without stepping on a spider, you know, which is terrible. but then we get stepped on.
Well, and I know there have been little studies about that vegetables feel things too. I mean, you have to be an Aeritarian too. And that's the cycle of life.
Yeah, and also, if my own personal feeling is that if you are like that and you are using it again to beat other people over the head with the fact that you are purer, there is something wrong. This is not about food anymore.
One time at a bunch of folks from KBOO went down to Woodburn to help build a low-power radio station for the Latino community. And so there were a lot of vegans because they came from KBOO. And this is just a great story. And so the women were, the abuelas were fixing food for people. And they knew these folks were vegan. So with the ham and eggs, they put tofu in.
And I really hope the vegans ate it.
I have no idea.
And
probably
thanked
not.
Them.
I know. I do too, but
yeah.
You can take the ham out.
It's like my poor husband has a terrible time when we go to Spain, when we used to go to Spain, because it is impossible to be a vegetarian in Spain.
Yeah. What is it? The only thing they don't eat about the pig is the oink? And then someone said they have that on MP3s now.
And every part of the pig that they eat is absolutely delicious. And those pigs are treated well. You know, that's the thing. Factory farming is an abortion. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah.
You don't want to be torturing your food source.
And in the Pacific Northwest, here on the left coast, we seem to have a lot more. In your area, you've got great sources for food.
Oh, we do. Well, the Pacific Northwest is incredible. The West is incredible. Oregon is amazing. As you know, I am a huge Oregon booster for all of those reasons. Wine, you know, every conceivable green, hazelnuts. I mean, we are bountiful beyond belief. We are really, really lucky, and we need to know that we are lucky, preserve that luck, and try to expand that luck out to the rest of the world rather than huddling, you know?
Oh, when I was in Florida, my folks had retired to Florida. And I think it was after my dad died. My brother was down there, and he lives in Chicago. And it's not much. He likes Stouffer's, bless his heart.
Well, yeah.
and I was trying to find places that I actually wanted to shop. Mm. And he said, well, why do you go to places like that? And I said, well, where I live, that's where we shop. We have places. We think of how many great places in Oregon there are to get. Being gluten-free is not a problem here.
Mm-hmm. Really, you can do it. You can do anything. And and going to a supermarket, I mean, depends on the supermarket, but it's one of my great pleasures. I love going shopping. I love going. Food for Less in Medford, Oregon is one of my favorite places. I'm going to stop there.
Why?
On my way home. Well, first of all, everybody that works there is in a great mood. And when you say that, they say, oh, our boss is great. We love it here, you know? Mm-hmm. They have a huge no one ever believes me that a place called Food for Less has an enormous organic section that's all local, because their whole ethos is buy local and sell local and be nice to your employees. And it's open 24 hours a day, and it's near the Medford Airport. So if you're ever in Medford, I recommend it.
And you need to shop.
And they have real butchers.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's local meat. And when the 4-H kids slaughter their animals, they have the meat at Food for Less with pictures of the animals and the kid that raised it next to the meat. I mean,
I love the Pacific Northwest.
I love the Pacific Northwest. I love Food for Less. It's where I get my tripe, which is actually in the book. I know there are people out there going, tripe.
So what do you love about tripe?
Well, I love that it's cheap. I love that.
Okay, we got that.
Mm-hmm, I love that I love that it gets wasted if I don't eat it. I love that it's glutinous, which I really personally love. I love menudo. And I love how easy menudo is to make. So there's a really good recipe in this new book for menudo that came from a Christmas Eve dinner where I made menudo and split pea soup for everyone else because I was sure they would freak at the menudo. And then I was eating the menudo, and all the split pea soup eaters were going, oh, that smells good. Can I have a taste? And it was all gone. I had like maybe one helping left for the next day. And the split pea soup was still there. So.
I love how you educate people. I also, you were a screenwriter for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in your cookbooks that I love is that you physically take us from place to place. You move it along. You tell the story, and it moves along physically really well that I've never seen in another food memoir.
I had no idea. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, I didn't even know I did that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you get that it is, screenwriting is a fantastic training for any kind of writing because you just automatically start paring off the fat and moving on to something. You just have to.
Right.
You know? Especially, I was an independent film producer too, and you just do it because, and you're very practical too, because no, I'm not going to be able to afford that car. Cut, you know? So it is a very good training for writers, in case any of you out there are struggling with an idea of how to go forward. Screenwriting is always a good thing.
That's good. Well, I've always appreciated that in your food writing books.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, also your other books. It's to me, it's very noticeable how it's a visual thing. I can visually see what's going. It gives me visual cues.
Well, you know, it's funny. As my husband, who's a filmmaker, we were doing. I don't remember
Alex
what.
Alex Cox.
Alex Cox, and he said to me once something like, only the finest garbage should ever be delivered to this house. And I suddenly had an image in my head of a guy and a woman in a snowy Chicago. And I said, that's weird. What's that from? I could see a guy and a woman. And he started laughing. And he said, I never realized how visual you were. That's from a script you wrote 20 years ago. And it was embedded. The image had come to me first. And then the line was, only deliver the finest garbage to this house from now on. You know, they'd come up in the world and
right.
They were saying to the garbage truck. But that was really interesting that it's all image, you know, which is great. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why I love food so much, because I'll be lying in bed, an image will come up of a roast duck, and I'll think,
That's one of my favorite parts about cooking is when you're done. I mean, I like constructing it, but when you're done, how beautiful things look.
Yeah.
I like them to still look beautiful.
Yeah, and I like them to look like themselves. I like white plates. I like things to look like themselves. I don't like them to look like the Empire State Building.
Food stacking.
Or, yeah, what's that architect's name? Anyway, yes.
Or Frank Gehry things.
Yeah, right. I don't like food to look like a Frank Gehry building. I like a Frank Gehry building to look like
that's
a Frank
right,
Gehry
which
building.
Is always yeah. good. In case you just tuned in, this is KBOO and Radio, and it's Between the Covers. And I have the great pleasure this morning of talking with Todd Davies, author of what we're talking about this morning is Jam Today, a food.
Diary of Cooking with What You've Got.
What You've Got, baby. And this is the new revised edition. So there's some things that I can't believe you ever cooked with Teflon pans.
Well, I did. I mean, everybody did. Yeah.
Sort of. Were they thick?
No, because they were cheap. You know, we bought the cheap ones, usually the thrift store. You know, and then I found out that thing about how you can't cook with a Teflon pan with a parrot in the kitchen because it kills the parrot, the fumes.
Yeah, it's plastic.
And that's when you think,
Well, they always said to only use medium heat, and you can't do that with everything.
No. But those ceramic pans, I mean, have you found them? I love them.
I am a débrouilleur. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
I don't know
French,
what it is.
Well, these are French pans that are steel. They mold them. And I had two that I had for like 30 years, and I moved once and forgot them, and someone took them. And I've got another one now, but it takes a while once you season them, you can't use acid with them.
Oh, that's like cast iron. Yeah.
No, but it's different than cast iron, because now the cast iron pans are chintzy.
I still have my father's.
There you go.
Yeah.
And débrouilleur is steel is not at all. They're heavy duty. You can put them in the oven. They're great for searing meat like steaks and, you know, finishing them off in the oven and all manner of things, except you can't put acid in them. But then I like all clad.
When my father died my family said, okay, what does everybody want as a memento?
Oh, I would take those.
I said the only thing I wanted was his cast iron pan. Which he cooked all of the skirt steak. I loved skirt steak when I was a little girl. He used to cook skirt steak for me and for my birthday. So that pan is imbued with all sorts of things, you know, and which all of cooking should be. And if you've got a family, you should be creating these kind of traditions for your kids too, you know. I mean, this idea of not eating together absolutely appalls me. Everybody needs to eat. A family needs to eat together when they can, at least, you know, once a day, sit down and actually eat. Think about what they're
That's
eating.
When we fought. It was the only time we got together, and so we would always fight.
Yeah. No, my family fought too. My family fought too, but I still think it was a good idea.
Yeah. I agree. Well, but you also love to eat alone.
Oh, yeah, I do. Because that's when you're communing with yourself. And really, you can't commune with anybody else until you really have a good relationship with yourself.
And children are taught that it's very healthy to learn to play alone. So I don't know why eating alone and cooking alone, I love. People go, how can you cook for yourself? And I'm like, if I can't cook for me, how can I cook for anyone else? But also, it's the fun time where you can make mistakes and not have to serve that to people.
Mm-hmm. And go wild, you know?
Yeah.
I have that recipe for popcorn with yes, brewer's
what is
yeast
that?
On it. Popcorn with brewer's yeast, which I think it was you that actually told me about this years ago, was that brewer's yeast was really good on popcorn. I love when
that might have been a Grace moment.
Maybe it was Grace.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I really, really love is I'll have made, I will have a whole plan for myself. If I have a week alone, I will have plans about, I'm going to have lamb ribs one night. I'm sick of having full meals. And so I will have half a bottle of red wine and popcorn with lots of butter and garlic salt for dinner.
It just has just occurred to me in the last year or so that I can do that. I don't have to cook an entire meal for myself in the evening.
No, and that's the thing.
If I'm by myself.
You can cook an entire meal. You don't have to cook an entire, you want to be constantly asking yourself, what do I really feel like doing right now? And then it's a constant algorithm. What do I have? What do I feel like? What are the parameters of today? It's a really, I find it a pleasurable meditation.
Yes, exactly. Very much so.
It really is a sacred sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Because it is important what we put in our bodies. You truly are what you eat.
Yeah. And how you eat.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have relaxed your, didn't you, weren't you just, didn't, do you have a discipline about one glass of wine and that's
yeah,
different
yeah, no,
now?
That went. That went. And I'm sure everyone out there knows why one glass of wine a night went recently. Let's just say, I think, what was it? Somebody in the station when I came in said she now watches the news with the sound off. I get that too.
Oh. Yeah.
But I think that treating yourself well and treating your family well is these are the best things that you can do in times like now. Absolutely. And the kinder you can be to everyone, the better off everyone will be. So I support you in being as kind to your own body and as kind to the bodies of others as is possible without being stupid about it.
Well, and kindness when you're cooking something, because I know people
kindness
that are
for
like
your ingredients.
Yes, it's like they know high or low, or mostly just high or off are the temperatures that they cook things at.
Well, I see what you're saying. Like braising with the little bubble coming up. It's wonderful to watch that little braise go.
Yes, but some people really love high heat on everything, and it just drives me crazy. But that's just me. But it's because you want to be kind to these wonderful ingredients that...
Well, and sometimes they call out for high heat, you know. I'm part Chinese,
true.
So that the Chinese
true.
Part of me is always like, turn that sucker up, you know. Sear it. Yum.
Speaking of which, leftover... One of the recipes I loved that you had in here was the leftover takeout Chinese rice pudding.
Oh, I was so pleased about that one. I was really chuffed. It's taken, because we live in Southern Oregon and Chinese food is not really a feature of Southern Oregon. So I didn't have to worry about it for years. When I lived in San Francisco, I would always have those little cartons of white rice hanging around.
They just get stiffer and stiffer in the refrigerator.
Yeah. And so,
but making them rice pudding, now have you made it with some stiff rice? Did it soften it up?
Well, what I had done is I'd frozen it. I'd gotten three containers with this nice Chinese restaurant that finally opened near us, and I got three containers of white rice. And we eat brown rice. We don't eat white rice. So the fried rice was, I mixed it with a little of our brown rice for fried rice, but it wasn't really a mm-hmm. solution for three containers. So I threw them in the freezer because I thought I'll feed them to the dogs because I make the dogs' food and white rice would go into the dogs' food. But that seemed kind of a waste too. And then Easter came, and I'd forgotten it was Easter, and we're half an hour away from the market, and I think it was snowing, and we had no dessert. So I looked at those little cartons of rice and thought, what can I do? And then I had coconut milk stuffed somewhere in the back of the pantry, and I had some dried up shards of coconut in one of the drawers mm-hmm. that I had bought for who knows what, for shortbread or something years ago, and some chocolate chips also.
Oh.
Yeah. So I thought,
no
and I
raisins?
Had eggs.
No raisins?
I don't think I had raisins. Well, I think I looked
but
at those chocolate.
You could substitute chocolate chips for raisins any old day
of
and
course.
It would work for me.
Of course. And you could put rum in it. You could do all sorts of things. But this was what I had that day. So I soaked, and I had eggs.
Right.
So I soaked the desiccated coconut in the coconut milk and it plumped right up. Never throw away dried coconut. It'll always plump up. And then I added some almond. I think I had one little teeny capful of almond extract left in the bottom of the bottle, so I added that. And then I added the chocolate chips and the rice and the eggs, and I baked it. And my husband finished it all off and said, can we have this again? It was really good. So, and I felt that was a personal triumph.
Yeah, it's a
over entropy.
It's a great, because I never know what to do with that. I can't believe I hadn't thought of rice pudding.
Ha!
Ah! But that's why there's more than one of us on this planet, because we can all think about things.
And then we share.
And we share. And, you know, I haven't mentioned that you are going to be speaking tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne. That's 3723 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard at 7:30. Mm-hmm. If you can go, it's nothing is more fun than having Todd talk, because you completely include the audience. So really, if you have questions, there have been times when we've just sat around in a circle and had with you. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I like that much better. I'm highly interactive. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to come, I think I'm going to pass out some pieces of paper and have you write down one kind of food, and then we'll mix them up and see what we would make out of food things that are pulled out of a hat.
Oh, excellent.
We'd make from that. Pretend we're in a vacation home and all we have is one lasagna pan and a wooden spoon.
I love those sort of eat what you have kind of things. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. Have you ever done it on radio? You've done food on radio, food shows on radio.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
no,
Rosetta Casper used to do that.
I had a food show
on
radio
I know.
Years and years and years ago. And one of the things that we did was we would go to people's houses and look in their refrigerators, and then I would say, oh, you could do this and this and this, and that was how I started all of this too. It was really fun going to bachelor houses where they said, we have nothing.
Oh God,
nothing.
Oh, that's great. So David Letterman stole that from you.
Oh,
he used to go to people's houses and look at their bedrooms and stuff. I know. And his very first show. So we got about 3 minutes left, and what have I not asked you that you wanted to be asked?
Oh, I don't know. I always want to be asked whatever you want to ask.
Well, sometimes you have an idea, and I just didn't want to miss anything.
I think I just want everybody to have as good of a time as possible. That's really, I would like to encourage you all to be having wonderful meals, please. And if anybody feels like telling me about their wonderful meals, I really love that. I love hearing about stuff that happens.
You can find Todd on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. And you can find me. I mean, go to the exterminatingangel.com website.
Right.
And you can find me easily there. And there's a Jam Today blog on that website.
I was just going to mention that.
I say that in this revised edition, because this edition, the first edition came out in 2009. I have made so many friends as a result of that book. You know, so many people I've connected with over food.
And I hear people who've read it talk to me and say, I really look for what I've got now instead of just going, I mean, it is, you have affected people's lives profoundly.
Oh. That really makes me happy. Thank
Good.
You.
You're welcome. So once again, Todd's going to be speaking tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne, Powell's Books on Hawthorne, 3723 Southeast Hawthorne at 7:30. Be there or be square. I say. But we still have a couple minutes.
Let's talk about fairy tales then.
All right.
Okay. You know, because I also write fairy tales.
Yes, you do.
What I call fairy tales for adults of all ages. And really, they're about the same thing. They're about a small world that is trying to figure out how to increase joy within the parameters of life and expand it out. And it's surrounded by a horrible empire, a hideous empire that just wants permanent growth. So, and I think that stories form culture. And that the better the stories that we tell each other, the better the culture is going to be. And food forms us.
It does. And Todd Davies, I want to thank you so, so very much for being with us this morning. Once again, anytime you come to town, we can always talk food. And people out there, read her books. One of the things I love about them the most, you don't give an exacto recipe. You want people to do some onions, cut some onions. So people learn how to, it's a great way to learn how to cook from Todd's books if you don't know how, in a pleasurable way. And this, her stories are great.
And be there at garlic.
And use garlic. It's good for you. And thank you for joining us for Between the Covers.
Bars 3. Drink up, baby, stay up all night. When the things you could do, you won't, but you might. The potential.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Big Waters Falling Up Tour, Tuesday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Paris Theater in Portland. Portland locals Big Water will be closing out their Falling Up Tour, featuring special guest Danielle Betancourt on the violin. Big Water will also be sponsoring a feeding for houseless people through AMA Global Care and the Paris Theater. Again, that's Big Water's Falling Up Tour, Tuesday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Paris Theater, 6 Southwest 3rd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Portland.
Hello, and welcome to Words and Pictures, the show all about the narrative arts scene. I'm S.W. Conser, and today we're roaming the galleries of the Portland Art Museum, talking with the people behind the exhibition Animating Life, the Art, Science, and Wonder of Laika. Animating Life is a show all about the stop-motion artistry behind the films of Laika Entertainment, including Coraline, Paranorman,